This is The Splendid Table from APM, American Public Media, the show for people who love to eat. I'm Lynn Rossetto Casper. We've all had those unforgettable moments in the kitchen. You know, you're cheerfully following a recipe, usually involving precious ingredients only available across town. You optimistically serve it up, take your first bite, and it's bad. Well, that could be when you figure that there's a real art to testing and writing a recipe. A famous cook may conjure up an incredible dish in their kitchen, but doing it the exact same way in yours might be a disaster. Ian Knauer understands this. Many great cooks wouldn't do a cookbook without him. Talents like Alice Waters and Thomas Keller, to name a few. So what does it take to make a recipe work for whoever picks up that cookbook? Contributor J.J. Good talked with Ian Knauer.
Hi, Ian.
Hey, J.J.
So before I ask you what testing recipes really means, let me ask you who you've tested recipes for.
Well, lots of different chefs. I worked for Gourmet Magazine for a long time in the test kitchen, and so we would run stories from different chefs, and you've heard of them. Alice Waters, Thomas Keller.
That guy.
Jonathan Waxman. Pretty much anybody who ran a story in the magazine in those 10 years, basically, that I worked there, I've tested recipes for.
So how does it work in the real world when someone tests a recipe?
So it depends on who you're testing for. If you're testing for a cookbook, let's say, for instance, you would go directly to the chef, and the chef will basically give you these notes, or maybe you'll trail him in the kitchen and sort of write down what he or she does. When you're testing for a magazine and you're running a feature story about a chef, you'll usually get recipes in either from the chef or their sous chef from the restaurant that will be in the menu for the feature article.
And when those come in, are they in good shape?
Well, it depends. It really depends on the chef. For instance, Laurent Gras, his recipes are so meticulously written that a monkey could follow them and get it right, and like get it perfectly right. Like he'll call for like an inch measure of fish, and he says if the fish is too big, then cut it down. You know,
something we do at home all the time. Right?
Exactly. And so you know, when he's cooking, everything is so precise that he just writes down exactly what he does, and you know, because your fish is that perfect size, it cooks in the perfect time over the
right.
perfect heat, and he's written all that down for you.
Right.
Other chefs who I won't use their names because they are actually great chefs, and their restaurants are amazing, their food is great. They're not as meticulous in writing down exactly what they do. So sometimes you'll get in just like literally like chicken scratch on a napkin and it'll be like, you know, like it'll say something like robo pois. And like, what does that even mean? You know,
what does that even mean?
That means, you know, put a peeled carrot, some celery and an onion in the food processor and pulse it. So robo is restaurant speak for Roboku, which is their industrial version of a food processor. And pois is mirepoix, which is celery, carrot and onion.
So you're a translator.
Totally. Yeah, totally.
Or like
those
the first step is translating.
The first step is translating into English and then translating into English that someone at home can read the recipe and get the result that they want.
So are you trained? Did you go to culinary school? Did you work in restaurants?
Well, the first job that I got in food was a recipe tester, and this was for Gourmet Magazine, and I had not been to culinary school, which is the reason I got the job. I was an avid home cook, so I loved to cook from magazines and cookbooks, but I wasn't trained. And that was important to them because they wanted someone who would cook like a home cook.
Right.
So the reason that I was hired to test those recipes is to basically be the fine-tooth comb to go through and make those mistakes that the readers at home would make so that by the time it got published, the editors could come say, oh, well, you know, Ian, the dummy in the kitchen, made these mistakes, and chances are people at home make those mistakes too. So let's make it so clear that they don't make those
right.
mistakes.
So there are plenty of disasters, I imagine.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Any that stick out?
Try to forget them.
or the mistakes that a recipe leads you down the wrong path.
Okay, so the first one that comes to mind was from a restaurant in New York City, which I love and is still open, but I won't use their name because the pastry chef sent a recipe for a tart, and the crust for the tart had like an obscene amount of butter in it. And so
even more than usual.
Even more than usual.
Even more obscene than usual.
Right. Which could be, you know, could be a really good thing. And this pastry chef is quite spectacular. Her recipes are delicious. So I tested the recipe as it was written, and I actually went up to a meeting And someone called me from the test kitchen and said, Ian, your oven is on fire. And the crust had actually melted because there was so much butter in it, and melted off the sheet tray that it was on and down onto the bottom of the oven, and all the butter like caught on fire. It became like a lamp, basically. So then I had to go back to that pastry chef and say, hey, you know, this basically could set someone's house on fire. So is there possibly a mistake? And she had basically made a mistake in cutting down the recipe.
Scaling it down.
And scaling it down, and had forgotten to scale down the butter along with the flour and everything else.
So aside from catching people's mistakes, what else do you do as a recipe tester?
I basically turn the written recipe into instructions that someone who is not a very capable cook can follow to a T and get the same result as the chef. That's really the goal. Now, people who cook at home a lot and have some more experience or have been to culinary school can use that same recipe. And if they want to cook it to a T, they'll get that exact result. But then they can also use it sort of as a template, as a jumping off point.
Right. And I've noticed in magazines, for instance, the recipes tend to be written in this sort of very bare bones language, almost like a robot is telling you what to do.
That's right.
Do all recipes have to be like that?
They don't have to be. I think that the reason that magazines gravitate toward that speak, if you will, is because, one, they don't have a lot of space on the page, and so they need to cut down as many words as possible.
Right.
And two, if you throw in flowery language or imagery, a lot of times that can be distracting. So if instead you just say, mix together this, 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 and this until it's combined, period. And someone can do that, you know, and not get caught up into, you know, do you smell this aroma that's coming out of the bowl and circling your head with spices and you know.
But sometimes that's nice,
sometimes
right?
Sometimes that is nice. And there are lots of chefs who do that. And one that comes to mind is Judy Rogers with her Zuni cookbook, which is one of my favorite books. It's just so beautifully written. And you really get her voice in the recipes. It's almost like poetry.
So Ian, is there any way to tell just by looking whether a cookbook had been well-tested and the recipes are well-written?
Well, you know, that's where I think the acknowledgments page comes in. Go to the acknowledgment page in the cookbook and look who's thanked for recipe testing. If there's no one thanked, then chances are it hasn't been tested too thoroughly. But if it lists, you know, two or three testers or cross-testers, then you can probably rest assured that they're going to work, or chances are they'll work.
Right, right. Awesome, Ian. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me, JJ.
Ian Knauer is the author of The Farm, Rustic Recipes for a Year of Incredible Food. J.J. Good's latest book is Tacos, Tortas, and Tamales with Roberto Santibanez. Ian left us with a recipe that will surely work for butternut squash gratin, and you're going to find it on the website, splendidtable.org.